Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this 11th day of April. It's 13 minutes past 11 o'clock. Listening to the music of Blotto coming in. It's a sad day for those of us here throughout the Capital Region and here at WAMC as well. A member of our family and a good friend to so many artists and people in this region, Greg Hames, passed away yesterday. He was a music journalist. He was a musician. He was a regular on our Northeast Report with Brian Shields. And just a lovely, beautiful person who it was always a joy to see him. He was cynical and sarcastic in the most lovely way, and he would come in here and just brighten our days. And he did great work on the radio. He did great work throughout the region, as I mentioned, not only as a journalist but also as an artist himself. And we're going to be playing his music throughout the morning. Passed away to cancer. And, you know, I first met Greg in the late 1980s when he had an exhibit. Ira, you'll appreciate this. He had an exhibit at the Albany Public Library where he put on display his collection, selections from his collection of bad semi-celebrity autobiographies. And everyone from Rona Barrett to Jennifer Flowers, Vanna White, Meatloaf, Merv Griffin, and LaToya Jackson, and a billion others. And he just had that kind of, that shows how eclectic he was. As I said, we're certainly going to miss him. We'll have a memory of him tomorrow on Northeast Report, and to his family and to all of his friends who are grieving throughout the region this morning. Our thoughts to you and certainly to Greg and his family. It was a sad day when we found that out last night. So again, we'll be playing music throughout the morning. We will soldier on here, and let me introduce our wonderful panel to you. We have a lot to talk about, a lot of breaking news, a lot of cool things to mention. I mean good stories to talk about. So let us begin. Ira Fussfeld is with us. He is Daily Freeman Publisher Emeritus. Good morning, Ira. Good to have you back.
Thank you. Been a long time.
Yeah, it certainly has. So it's nice to have you here. Fran Berman is the Edward Hamilton Distinguished Professor of Computer. That would be cool.
Commuter science?
Yeah, commuter science.
I'm not an expert in commuter.
Figure. Well, you're from L.A. You should know how to get from
That's
one way
true.
To the other.
That's true.
Good morning, Fran.
Good
how are
morning.
You?
Good morning. How's everybody?
We're wonderful.
You're from L.A.?
I am.
Oh,
from LA.
I spent the last 9 weeks there.
I'm a California person.
We'll talk later.
Yeah.
Vera Carius Kelly joins us. She is a professor of comparative politics at Siena College. Vera, good morning.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
So nice to have you with us. Also, Dr. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, I'm not that good.
Oh, don't say,
well,
Alan.
No, there's a boiled water thing in Great Barrington.
There is?
Yeah, they found some animal poop in the holding tank, don't you see? And as a result of that, you know, you have to be very careful. You can't drink.
You have to boil it.
And you know, if you ever think about this, you know, you're brushing your teeth in the morning, and they say you have to boil the stuff before. So you have to, in the upstairs bathroom, you have to go downstairs, boil the water, cool it off, and bring it back. This interrupts your entire life.
You know, it's really amazing to think that 50% of the world's population actually deal with those conditions on
That's
a daily
right.
basis.
That's right, and it gives us a sympathy. You're so right, Vera. It gives us a sympathetic eye.
You just have to do it a couple of times or a week or whatever it is.
Well, the real question is, how did that animal get into that holding tank?
Oh, well, I'm sure that's not the first one. It's just the first one you know about.
Well, good morning, panel at WAMC.org.
Okay, like that.
And
we need a video on Ellen's face right now.
We will. Let's get started. Of course, the news to break over the overnight is that Julian Assange has been arrested. He is charged by the U.S. in a 2010 leak. Mr. Assange faces one count of conspiracy to hack a computer related to the 2010 release of reams of U.S. secrets by Chelsea Manning. The single charge stems from what prosecutors say was his agreement to break a password to a classified United States government computer. He Britain is expected to extradite the WikiLeaks founder, and I believe he is in court as we speak. So, Fran, let's begin with you of what this means, of exactly what he did as far as breaking these passwords and getting in with the computers and ultimately then going on the run for a long time. Well,
so
not on the run. He was
so
in one place.
So you just thought you'd start with an easy question, right, Joe?
Exactly.
Yeah. He's an interesting character. Many people think he's a villain. Many people think he's a hero. And in terms of consensus, there's consensus on both sides. My understanding of this is that Ecuador revoked whatever papers allowed him to stay in their embassy. Is that right? It's not because he left the embassy.
No. He was the president of Ecuador, Lenin Moreno, had wanted to really get him out of the embassy, and he had negotiated with a variety of governments to figure out what he could be accused of, and in fact, his protection was revoked in the embassy for the simple reason that he was accused of continuing to be on the internet trying to link up with hacktivists to disclose information, and apparently he had signed some kind of agreement with the Ecuadorian diplomatic corps in London not to continue to do that. So, but in essence, the Ecuadorians were getting kind of tired of hosting him and not finding a solution. They had tried to get him out to Russia a while ago, and the British government had said, you get him, you know, if he leaves the embassy, we're going to arrest him immediately. So the Ecuadorians were, in essence, stuck with him, and they tried to get rid of him for quite some time.
You know, one can only imagine, right, what the pressure was by this country, for example, or by the Brits on tiny little Ecuador, you know, to do this. It had to be a backbreaker.
I mean, in essence, Ecuador is not a wealthy country, as you said. It's a small country. It's not exceptionally powerful. And it has a new government. And it's not as left-wing as it once was. And so there was a bit of pressure to figure out economic opportunities for most Ecuadorians rather than protect Assange. And that is, in essence, what undermined Assange's ability to continue to stay.
Exactly.
Right.
And not trying to block Joe's question, but there's two interesting things to think about him as an iconic figure in information.
Yes.
And, you know, number one, there's the issue of, you know, his belief to get the information out there, information that, you know, agencies, people, et cetera, would deem as private, and just get it out there kind of without context.
Right.
And, you know, some people think that's a great thing and some people think that's not a great thing. The other thing to think about with respect to him is, you know, this is his decision, essentially, him and his, you know, group of people that he works with. And is he the right person to be making the kinds of judgments he's making? And what's the political spin on that? And there's a lot of people that have thought that more information should be out there, but maybe he shouldn't be the gatekeeper. And so, you know, there's kind of two ways to think about it.
So will you try it in the States or in Great Britain? Do we know that? I mean, they're going to get him from us. And the question is, do the States get him from Britain?
Oh, no doubt.
Yes.
No doubt.
Yes. And in which case, the really interesting thing to watch here is the so-called voir dire, in which they're going to look at the people who are going to be sitting on that jury. And Fran's points will be very much for people to be looking out for. There are going to be people sitting on that jury who say, yeah, well, good for him. He's a hero.
Well, you know, there's putting him in context and going back in history a little bit. I can recall 8 or 9 years ago, it's been that long, us starting to discuss him, Assange, on the Media Project. And at that point in time, it's my recollection that we were largely favorable to what he was doing. We were all for transparency, and he was releasing material that heretofore would not have been released. And then the evolution began. We started being critical of the fact that he was just dumping stuff out there without editing, without just letting it all out, and whether that was really really doing a service. And then as the years have gone by, and in most recent years regarding the election, whether or not he was really working with Russia to help undermine our election, which begs the question, and I maybe have misunderstood Alan's point, but does the Trump administration want this guy out there? I would think at this point he could be very damaging to them in the wake of this Russia investigation. Mm.
I think all of what you said is accurate at the same time, because in essence, early on, what Assange and WikiLeaks released allowed us insights into what was happening in Afghanistan, what some of the diplomatic cables said. And we gained insight into the kinds of conduct that was truly repulsive. And we needed transparency,
right?
And then there was a significant shift. It was really embarrassing for the U.S. administration, you know, several U.S. administrations, the diplomatic corps and so on, what was released. But then, you know, we had the Chelsea Manning issue, and the divisions became even more pronounced, as Fran explained.
Which is the heart of what the extradition is going to be.
Which is the heart of what this extradition is going to be about. And I believe the Trump administration can't wait to get their hands on him.
Oh, interesting. I think Ira makes a number of really good points here. But I have a sense that if a substantial portion of the American people think that this guy got Trump elected, that cannot help his popularity ratings in the way that he once was seen as sort of a savior of transparency.
But so you're also right. I mean, it's very interesting to sort of observe now what's going to happen. But one of the things to think about is also when you extradite somebody, you can snuff out the flow of information for quite some time. Yeah. And before this trial, before he's extradited, before this trial actually takes place, it might be years. So you can silence some of the information that could have come out for quite some time. So the Trump administration's.
What's curious, Vera, is you know, the information is out there. I mean, WikiLeaks has it.
Right.
So in the absence of Julian Assange, that doesn't mean that the information
Correct.
Has gone away.
So we'll see who else steps up.
Because,
I mean,
will
there
we
are
see
people...
if somebody else has it, if hackers get it and decide to put it out? It's hard to say.
We're pretty sure a couple of people in Australia have it.
Yeah, it's digital information. It lives forever.
And of course,
unless your website goes down.
There's another sidebar to the Assange story, and that he was accused of sexual assault or harassment in Sweden.
It was a rape. It was rape. A sexual
assault.
But
then it was dropped.
It's dropped.
Right?
And why was it dropped?
Don't know, but I heard on the way in this morning that it could be resurrected now that he's out again.
Correct. It could be resurrected, but also defenders of Assange have said this was simply initiated to get the extradition going. Because the accusation was dropped once he was in the Ecuadorian embassy. So it's all very fishy, everything around this case.
But,
and I think that's what makes it fascinating to all of us.
But plea bargain is a word, two words that come up in my head. In other words, if there's some information there that might be, for example, embarrassing to Trump, we don't know whether or not there was some arrangement. We do know that we heard that there was going to be this dump of all of this information from the Trump people, right? So maybe this was a proof of some kind of conspiracy. And so if you thought that, you would want to make sure that he's not sitting on in the witness chair spilling his guts. You'd want to give him the most favorable treatment to drop all of this you could.
Possibly, except also for the case that a lot of the hacktivists connected to WikiLeaks are sitting in Russia these days.
I love that word, by the way.
So,
hacktivist.
So I think it's an interesting scenario. We just have to really peel the onion here to figure out what's going on, and we know very little so far. But you know, I think Russia will play a central part in
but
this
you
entire.
But you know what happens when you peel the onion.
So here's a question. So say he's brought here and on charges, and he's either innocent of charges or pardoned or whatever, plea bargained. Can another country then haul him somewhere else and bring him up on charges?
Of course. Yes, because, you know, double jeopardy only exists in this country, in this particular environment. So if, you know, a European country wants him on some kind of, related or unrelated accusation, in addition to that, the Australians might want him back.
Right. Interesting. Wow.
So we wait, we see what happens, and then... And then what about Edward Snowden still hiding out too?
Edward, yes, he's in Russia. He's one of the people I was referring to.
Yeah, and that's a fascinating story too. And you wonder what will happen there.
It is.
But it is funny how quickly people forget about the Edward Snowdens and other people. Don't you think?
Well, he's still active in cyberspace. You know, he'll speak at places and stuff like that.
Well, you're
very
bright, and Vera's very bright, and you have memories. But there are those of us who don't.
Sometimes.
All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We will have letters, and we'll move on to other topics. We welcome your thoughts. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here. Vera Karius-Kelly, Fran Berman, and Ira Fussfeld all squeezed into Studio A waiting for your letters, and we'll get to those and many other topics. We've got a lot to talk about this morning. Panel at WAMC.org. We will be back right after this short break. Hold on. Yeah, say it again. Go ahead. Now you're on the air.
We don't have Fran that often, and I wanted to ask...
Alan, start over again.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Now we're on the air. Go ahead.
Good. And Fran, I know that you're the person to ask this question to. I was fascinated by the picture of the black hole in the New York Times. Is this important?
One of our stories. But that's fine. We can do it now. Do you want to do letters first and then do that?
I can't wait to hear Fran what she says.
Oh, all right. Geez. Well, go ahead, Fran.
All right. For our listeners,
Yeah, that's right.
I was just glowing to Alan over the break about how exciting this black hole result is. And it's the first time we've had an image of a black hole. We've known about them. There's black holes in virtually every galaxy. For those who don't know a black hole, not so easy to understand. A black hole is kind of, in some sense, at the end of a star's life when the core implodes on itself and there is so much gravity that it sucks up everything nearby.
Up. Yeah.
You know, everything that's close, everything that's small, everything that can't get away from its perimeter. And these things get bigger and bigger. They're the power of multiple suns. And it's the first time we've actually ever seen one. Astronomers trained 8 different telescopes on it during a period in April 2017.
And they know where to look.
They got, so you get a sense about the black holes from radio waves, but this is the first time we've had a picture of one. So they trained all these telescopes on it. They got so much data that they couldn't send it to the sites that analyze it on the internet. They had to use SneakerNet, which means they had to send, hard drives and data containers on airplanes and stuff like that.
So why is it important?
And they've just released the picture.
So why is it important? I mean,
it looks like a chocolate bagel, says says Joe.
Did I say that?
I think
that was Alan. I don't think I...
Sorry, Alan.
And I think I said chocolate donut, to be fair.
Okay, chocolate donut.
So the question
Ew.
Is, this is one of those examples of when the theorists come up with something, they're right. They know they're right, but they haven't seen it yet.
Yes.
And now you see it.
Yes.
And this is important because?
Well, as you remember, it helps verify the theory.
Right.
It gives you a lot more information about the thing at hand. So this is something that Einstein came up with.
Exactly.
And it surprised even him. And all of this time, everybody's kind of known in other ways, radio waves, et cetera, about the existence of the black hole, black holes in general, but no one had ever seen one. And this new technology, all of these modern telescopes, 8 different places around the world, allow them to gather the data, analyze it, and create a picture.
Now, I have one last question, and then I'll shut up. And that is because, it's all about me. So the question I have is, at what point are we in danger of being sucked into a black hole?
No, we are not. It turns out
that we are not close enough to be able to feel that gravitational
force. We're not near the nearest black hole.
Yes, we are not near the nearest black hole.
So you, I mean,
so cool.
You think of the astronomers in the story talking about that they just assumed it would be unseeable. That was the assumption, that it would be unseeable. And then you get to see it. And then now starts a whole new investigation because this whole new world has opened up.
Well,
and
now
that's
you
what's
have another tool, right? You have an actual image and you have all of this data you can mine. This is, you know, exciting in the same way that, remember a few years ago, the Large Hadron Collider, which is a big instrument, discovered something called the Higgs boson, which its significance was that it proved this, well, it was one way to prove the standard model of physics, which is the way people think about how the world came about and, you know, the different ways that particles interact with each other. It was the science breakthrough of the year. My guess is that this black hole is going to be another big, big, big result.
Well, and you say big, but so several billion times more massive than the sun.
Yeah.
I mean, that is amazing. And so you go into this this intergalactic space, M87,
which
was great in that Bond film.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
M87?
Oh, really? So
it's in Virgo.
A giant galaxy in the constellation Virgo. And then you go in and then you see this enormous thing. And we can only assume that more photos will come out, right? We can only assume that there will be more exploration of that?
Yeah, they have additional telescopes that have been collecting data. And so the results that we saw in the newspaper are only in these, you know, eight telescopes, but now there's more telescopes, there's more data, there's hundreds of scientists working on it. And one of the analogs that I saw is, imagine with all the gravity on Earth, we now collapse that into something from the size of the Earth to a size of a pea, with all the same gravity.
Wow.
And so, you know, everything disappears. Light disappears, you know, everything on it disappears. It's hard to know what happens inside, right? That's a mystery. In fact, some of the things the scientists have been thinking about is, imagine you disappear into a black hole. What happens to you, right? And we don't know. And so there's all kinds of scientific questions. You know, none of these results are never the end of the story. They're always the beginning of a bigger story.
Sounds like a Superman comic to
me. It is so cool.
So help me out with this. This is one of the things I wanted to ask you about this, which is my understanding is that the actual photo that we saw was taken 2 years ago. It was taken in April of 2017. Is that true?
Well, what they do is they get lots of data from lots of telescopes, right? Then they have to analyze the data. Then they have to put it together in a way they can sort of create the photo. So it may have been that they got the raw data. I'm not sure that they had the photo then.
Eight radio observatories, six mountains, four continents.
Four continents, yep, and hundreds of scientists.
Hundreds of scientists.
And in fact, they all kept it secret. So when they were analyzing the data, they gave it to four different teams of scientists who had no communication with each other, just to make sure these results would be valid and correlated with one another.
And the scientists were so excited. There was one quoted in the Times today of just saying, this is the greatest day to be alive. That is so cool.
It is so cool.
I think some of the interviews with the scientists, the younger scientists involved in this particular moment, are so interesting. I read a story about a young woman, graduate student, who developed the algorithms used for this particular, moment. And it's so nice to see the variety of young scientists, women scientists involved in this. It sort of sets a new stage for our next generation of scientists to think, this can be done. I can be in graduate school and re-explain the world and what's beyond our world.
I mean, this is a wonderful thing about science. It's like, you know, it's sort of you against the unknown. You have a question. And it doesn't matter what country you're in or what institution you work at or what gender you are or how old you are. You know, everybody can think about that question.
Right.
And, you know, institutional culture notwithstanding, you know, there's a real chance to do innovation.
So my question is, Fran, this is great from an astronomical point of view. Is there anything we're learning from the black hole that will help us here on Earth right now in terms of our lives, in terms of climate control, for example, or any of that? Is there any transference? Or we know the space program, a lot of stuff came out of the space program that was not anticipated.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting question. And a lot of time you have a scientific result like that. The connection between that and your daily life is a little far, right?
Yeah.
But the fact is, to create these results, the kinds of instruments you have, the kinds of theories you have, all of them sort of eventually bring to bear on our life. So, for example, in the space program, they had to develop a lot of new materials. They had to develop, sure, you know, a lot of ways of thinking about things. You drink Tang because of, you perhaps don't drink Tang, because of the space program. Mm-hmm. We had to really understand a lot about the world we live in. And that translates into good services, products, things to understand about our daily life.
Right.
We mentioned, and then we'll do the story before we go to a break, but you mentioned, of course, Einstein. That's a fascinating part of the story, because Einstein comes up with this,
yeah,
and then basically kind of he didn't like the idea. He kind of discards it and says, meh. And then obviously it's proven to be true.
Well, that happens a lot. You know, there are explanations for things and they just seem really unlikely or unintuitive. But that doesn't mean they're the wrong explanations.
It doesn't make Einstein any less smart.
No, you have to, you know, you have to just check things out to try to figure out. And then, you know, there's a whole army of scientists that are thinking, well, is that the way to think about it? Well, is some other way to think about it? That's kind of so wonderful about the whole enterprise.
But think about it, Joe, your point is so well taken. How unique Einstein was as an individual at a particular point in time, that he could do all of this stuff. And it turns out that he was incredibly brilliant and prescient.
Well, I kind of agree with you in some way and not in others. It's like Einstein really captured the thinking of his point in time, as did Marie Curie, as did Thomas Edison, as did, you know, lots of people.
Meaning it would have happened anyway?
Well, scientists all over the world are sort of thinking about really hard problems, and sometimes someone has the right insight first, and sometimes a whole bunch of people have the right insight, and sometimes the person who makes the most contribution is someone who takes that insight and brings it in a whole new direction.
Well, so, Roselle played Einstein's wife in a play.
Oh, that's pretty impressive.
And that's a pretty interesting story, because you know, a lot of people think she did it.
So one of the things I wanted to mention now is to bring it a little bit back into a political realm. We're at a moment where we have to very carefully think about how we translate these kinds of scientific innovations and these new ideas for a general public, because I believe that a lot of people will say, so why are we doing this, and what purposes does it serve, and we already have.
Shouldn't we just buy another tank instead?
Yes, and do we have, in essence, a general public understanding that science contributes to an improvement in the quality of life eventually, and our understanding? And so many people in this country are currently moving away from embracing science. They're moving in the direction of saying, well, that is so obscure, inexplicable to me. I don't understand what purpose it serves. And I think we're at a point where we need a lot more work that has to be done, like what you do, Fran, in terms of interpreting for us what this moment in time means in terms of bringing science into our lives, into our discussions, into our households.
Well, they're not only moving away from it, they disbelieve in it, and that comes right from the top.
And in the meantime,
But Vera has a really important point. And, you know, for our listeners, and I'm sure, you know, many of you know this, every single thing you deal with in your life came from science. You know, you have a plastic cup in your kitchen. You know, we understood materials and plastics and how to shape them into a cup and how to, like, hold hot things in them because of science. You drive a car. The whole understanding about how engines work and how to make that car efficient and aerodynamic comes from engineering and science. You know, you go and visit a friend in a building, and all of the materials in the building and the way we put the building together and the HVAC and all of that stuff, all of that originally comes from science. So science really provides a way for us to progress in our world. You know, if you ask what products are coming from that black hole, well, today that's a little bit hard to answer. You know, it's not so clear. But I guarantee you the kind of understanding we have from that black hole will eventually translate into something you can use in your life.
And we'll probably have improved vacuum cleaners at very least.
I will say, what is 2 minutes and 40 seconds? Does anybody know the answer to that? Two minutes and 40 seconds?
The break.
No, that was the time. This was actually marked. That was the time from the time that the picture went on Twitter to the time that someone posted a close-up of the photo and saying inside the black hole were Trump's tax returns.
I'm so impressed you noticed that.
And remember, and I thought, that's why we have the internet and science there, right there.
We wanted to remind Alan when he goes home to drink some Tang, boil the water.
Yeah. Good point, Ira. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will go to letters. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Downtown Albany BID, presenting Restaurant Week starting tomorrow through Friday the 19th. Featuring three-course meals at Hudson Harbor Steak and Seafood, Le Cerf, and more, downtownalbany.org for menus. The Spot 518, a weekly arts entertainment and cultural publication for the Capital Region, available online in newsstands and venues. TheSpot518.com. Berkshire Orthopedic Associates, an affiliate of Berkshire Health Systems, providing orthopedic services in the Berkshires, including Mako robotic surgery, sports medicine, and anterior hip surgery. 413-499-6600. And from First Light, providing high-speed data internet co-location and voice services to businesses over its own fiber optic network and supported by locally based personnel. FirstLight.net.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Nice to have you with us. Let's go to letters before we go to a break. Go ahead.
Okay. And we heard from Anthony in Belchertown. Alan, there's a black hole at the center of our galaxy, the Milky Way, and we will eventually be sucked into it in eons of time.
So I read about that black hole. We have one, too. Lots of galaxies have them. From what I read, we seem to be in no danger of being sucked into our own black hole. But of course, if it gets big enough, perhaps that will happen.
We seem to be in no danger. That's what we consider, my friend Elliot always called the, the famous last words.
Yeah.
FLWs. Yeah. Okay.
Good question.
And then Christine says, we need to discuss Katie Bowman, who developed the algorithm for the picture.
Yes.
A woman loves math with middle school daughter who excels at math. Katie Bowman needs to be celebrated as a role model. And that's from Christine.
And that is exactly, thank you so much, because I couldn't remember her name, but that's the account I read, and I loved her story. So Katie Bowman was the young scientist.
Cool.
Thank you.
And Roslyn says, from Clifton Park, one of the most impressive and inspiring things about this discovery is the fact that 200 scientists from all over the world cooperated and collaborated to make this happen.
Yes.
There is, in capital letters, hope for mankind. Good news for a change. I would just deal with the mankind and say humankind because of what we just heard about Katie Bowman, right? Yeah, okay.
And this is, you know, what scientists do. They look in, they're looking to answer a big question, and they find a way to team together, certainly the people with all the telescopes and the people doing the analysis. And it's a real model for, how people can work together to solve big problems.
And then Mike from High Falls says, just to reiterate Fran's comment, yes, this black hole supports Einstein's theory. Astronomy class should be mandatory for everyone, reminding us how small we really are. By the way, we still have no idea about how small we really, really are.
Pretty darn small.
Think about that. A source of great humility that everyone needs right now. Please send a college brochure to our president. Mike from my folks. Oh,
God. We'll task that to Alan.
Did you have one from Trump University?
Elias says, the amazing thing about Assange is that he was a hero to many on the left, but later did his best to elect Donald Trump. Yes. His belief is that the turmoil of a Trump presidency will lead to a revolutionary change in the status quo.
And I think he might be wrong on that.
Or he might be right. Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
One of those.
We don't know.
The frogs are boiling.
I'm not going to give him any points for it, I can tell you that much, because it's not his intention. Okay, so Keith says, Assange, I remember when our president asked for Assange and WikiLeaks to hack and release his opponent's email. Pardon me. I absolutely agree with that. Does Assange deserve a pardon from Trump because Assange did his political dirty work for him? Trump did pardon Arpaio for doing the birther investigations.
Well, but that's the border issue, not his favorite issue. I don't think that Trump is going to actually deal much with Assange, to be honest.
Unless, dot, dot, dot. Okay, so, all right. And Diane says, WikiLeaks, good morning, panel. Do you think the U.S. may charge Julian in relation to the leaks of Hillary emails and those emails or hacked DNC persons?
Well, unless WikiLeaks also has Ivanka Trump's, information that they apparently also could access, or her husband's, communications with various Middle Eastern governments. I suspect they also have something like that they could access or have handy.
Yeah.
And Lynn says, Assange finally must explain how Roger Stone got stolen documents from Gossifer 2. Now, that's a very interesting question, right? I mean, we know that there's a tie-in. We suspect that there's a tie-in. Mm-hmm. Roger Stone is still alive to be tried in the Southern District of New York, and Assange is a relevant witness. And that, Joe, is all I got.
All right, let's move on to other topics for today. We certainly have much more to discuss. Let's go to, let's go to Brexit.
EU,
I know. Guess who we're going to talk to? EU leaders offer to extend Brexit until October, avoiding a chaotic exit on Friday so that they can have a chaotic exit on a Friday in October. Halloween, maybe.
I think the Halloween reference is quite accurate.
Yeah.
So now
scary,
they got this
ghoulish.
Another extension. It'll be very interesting if Theresa May actually survives this whole ordeal as a prime minister, because obviously some of her own party members are gunning to replace her now. This is I think people are so tired of her because. She makes promises about how this is going to lead to a next step, and it won't. And now she has another extension, which gave members of her party, rashes. Can we call it rashes? Because they were obviously what we now face is that there will be no new negotiated withdrawal arrangement from the European Union, but the status quo in essence remains, but they have more time to discuss how they're going to go about it to avoid a hard Brexit.
And yet, Vera, she's still there.
Well, we'll see. We'll count the days now.
Well, I think a lot of people have been counting around.
Mm-hmm. But the issue is the Irish border question has been decided. There's not going to be a reopening of anything. That even if she tries, the Europeans aren't going to go there. There will not be. The announcement also was that's very important that the Europeans are not going to offer Theresa May a negotiated process to figure out what kind of economic arrangements they will have after they leave the European Union. Mm-hmm. That is one of the fundamental demands that some of the conservatives have forwarded. They want to know, they want to have more assurance about what the future holds economically. And in fact, the European Union has said, no, you decide whether you want to be part of the club or want to leave the club. And once we have that decision, that's when we begin to negotiate new economic relations.
And what about the European club themselves? Mm. What do they really, really want? I keep really wondering, I mean, if you really didn't give a damn, you would not give them this extra time, right?
Well, you give them the extra time because a disorderly departure will cause deep economic harm, not only to the UK, but also, you know, Germany and France and some of the other important.
So how is that going to change when we come to the end of this little bit of a respite?
It is possible that...
Well, is part of this extension the hope that the longer this stretches out, that Great Britain will finally say, let's have a do-over? That they
possibly.
vote on this.
I mean,
all
this
over.
Is what they're possibly
there seems
counting
to be
on.
A lot of buyers
either
remorse.
Do a new election, hold a new election in the UK, and make a decision, or pursue a second referendum for clarity.
Right.
I mean, these are the options. The Europeans are saying, "Come on, people, can you decide now?"
It seems like they all have a case of Brexhaustion, right?
I mean, I know it's simplistic, but it seems to me, as somebody who has not followed it closely, they had this vote. The vote was, "Let's get out." All right, get out. I mean, what has been going on this last year or so that's extended this and argued about it?
Well, I think Vera's already answered the question.
Yeah, I would not have thought it's that complex. It clearly is.
Well, I still am looking at Theresa May and wondering about the double, triple, quadruple fake out. Now, she said right in the beginning that she was not for leaving.
Right.
And yet, she's the one who has been assiduously really resisting going back for that second vote.
But she's also gone back every other time on, this is the last proposal. This is the last time we vote on it. This is the last time I'm coming to the Europeans to discuss this.
We've all done
issue.
It with our kids.
I mean,
one,
two, three, do
three,
over.
Three and a half, three and three quarters.
She also wants to do it before they have to vote on Parliament, right?
Well, the funny thing is now the Brits are preparing to participate in the European Union elections.
Right.
They
right.
are now participating.
Right.
Starting today, they're going to figure out who's going to run for European Parliament and all the stuff, which they said they didn't want to do. So now they're back in. So the question is, where is this road leading? Is this simply going to lead to an internal collapse in the UK where we just say, let's just pretend this referendum didn't happen. It was complete mayhem. We can't do it.
Yeah.
Or are we going to do a redo referendum? Or, you know, something has to be shaken up because this can't continue because I don't think the European Union, well, the only option the European Union has because they don't want other countries to follow suit is to either figure out, they give them extension after extension because the longer the UK struggles over this issue, the lesser the chance is that the UK actually leaves the European Union.
So, Vera, what's going to get them out of this limbo, right? They just voted on a gazillion options. They didn't like any of them. What's going to push them over the edge into some real direction?
Oh, I know. I know.
Alan knows.
Frustration.
Oh, I think they're beyond frustration.
Well, no, I mean, the point is, even on some of the many myriad of options that they were getting, they were coming down to a 3-vote margin and to a 4-vote margin, which in the beginning they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some people who are saying, oh, come on, let's get over this. Let's get over the line.
I think my best bet is they're going to have a new parliamentary election in the coming few months.
For the UK.
And who are you going to elect? You're not going to elect the Labour Party under Corbyn, are you? I mean, he's widely despised as well as May.
There are also, you know, once you call for an election, there could be shakeups within each of the parties. And there could be smaller parties that actually gain some support.
Well, is there any indication that there's anything like a majority of her party that will call for a single replacement who is popular enough to get replacing?
Not yet. But there might be.
Ira reminds Joe it's time to go.
No, Joe knew. I've been Bray's been glaring at me for at least 90 seconds.
Well, he's always glaring at everybody. We know that. You can see his
Ray
face.
Just did
I
something
can't.
You can't talk about on radio.
We'll be right back. Listening to the Ramblin' Jug Stompers and our friend Greg Hames, who passed away yesterday, and remembering him through his music this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We have some letters. We'll do those, and we'll move on to other stuff.
All right, Joe. We heard from John, who said that black hole. I have no more insight into the meaning of life than anyone else, but I know this. We are intended to learn. The day we die, whether as individuals, society, or a nation, or even a species, is not the day we expire. It's the day that we decide to stop learning. Have a great day. Enjoy your life. It is a gift.
That is so true.
John,
what a wonderful message.
It's
yeah.
a good message. And you, Vera, yeah. more than anybody else who studies, you know, these comparative politics and international relations, you would know that some of the dictatorships in this world really do want to put a stop to learning.
They do. They want to mislead. They want to stop our insides. They want us to not think about why conditions are the way they are. They want us to become uneducated, uninformed, and apathetic.
And that is one of the dangers of this mm-hmm. contemporary president of the United States, because he tends mm-hmm. to like what some of these folks on the, you know, on the dictatorial side are, mm-hmm. are like. And he also tells terrible lies, which have no foundation in fact or truth. I hate to bring it around to that.
Right. Remember the windmills that caused cancer?
Yeah,
oh, yes.
Yeah. Windmills.
How?
Well,
you know,
just by listening to them.
Just by listening to them.
By listening to them.
You know, many of us, not all of us, but many of us have been very careful about labeling Trump supporters as ignorant or stupid. And I think that's unfair. And there are certainly a lot of people who
What's
are not.
That we do?
That we do.
Yeah, because a lot of them are highly educated.
But I'll tell you who I think does think they're stupid, and that's uh-huh. Trump.
Well,
he makes comments, and some of the lies that Alan refers mm-hmm. to, or the thing about the windmills and the noise from the – I mean, it's just such nonsense. And he's saying it, I believe, in part because he thinks his people are stupid.
Well,
and
he thinks a certain percentage are certainly uneducated about those things, but he also knows that his activities as the great disruptor are very welcome among highly educated people. And I happen to know some people that are – scientists that support Trump.
Right.
So they don't take anything he says seriously, and they don't care what he says about science. What they care about is that he disrupts politics yeah. as normal.
Well, I'll give you a nugget of possibly surprising but good news about science in this administration, which mm-hmm. is although he did not get the designation of science advisor like John Holdren had for Obama, the current head of the Office of Science and Technology Policy is a guy named Kelvin Drogemeyer. Mm-hmm. He has studied, you know, tornadoes and all kinds of sort mm-hmm. of interesting catastrophic weather conditions, and he is the real deal.
Oh, good.
So we have a good scientist heading up
Happy
OSTP.
To hear.
Yeah, but you know what that proves? That proves that you're going to have a bureaucracy and that you're going to have some real bright people there, and that when they say something you don't like, mm-hmm. you fire them.
Well, that is certainly also true. I mean, we've seen that in a variety of the bureaucracies now. I mean,
sure.
constant removal of those that don't publicly and openly agree with you, and then waiting for somebody to come up who actually just simply wants to be a lackey.
Yeah, sure. And in North mm-hmm. Korea, a country which is headed by a man that Trump has said he loves— the only difference is you don't fire them, you kill them.
Oh, well.
Well, what?
I'm not sure I understood
okay,
that parallel.
Saying,
but
you're saying when you don't agree with, when the president doesn't agree with somebody, he fires them. And I say the
yes,
only thing
I,
is
I don't think it's quite the same as execution squads.
Well,
in
I agree.
North Korea.
I agree.
There's still a few steps missing.
Well, yeah.
See, even Ira is choking. He's coughing
well, but
now.
But you know what? We're getting there.
Yeah. Well. I mean, we fear the death by a thousand stabs, don't yeah. we?
I was one of those who was sort of scoffed when Alan, at least a couple of years ago, was talking about this guy being a dictator and an autocrat.
Oh, he's working on
and
it.
And it's mm-hmm. I don't need to be convinced now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we've also heard from our friend John, Oh, yeah, we already heard from him, so we don't have to hear from him again.
We liked John.
But we really liked his letters, so
yes,
we can read
did.
It again.
Thank you for reminding us of that. And Joe from Wilbraham, where everybody has a pig. Hi, can somebody in the panel clarify what determined the length of the extension? Why 6 months and some other number? And what are the specific achievements that could be achieved in that time? I'll go first. Hope springs eternal.
Well, this goes back to the Brexit conversation. I think the assumption was that if there is an extension now for the UK, and that would require the UK to participate in European Union elections, it would make no sense to require the UK to participate in elections and just a month after that discontinue that relationship. So they basically said, you want to have more time to negotiate with your own parliament, you have to participate in the European Union elections, and then at least we'll give you at least 6 months to not make it seem like a complete farce.
Well, but could that be the aforementioned double, triple, quadruple fake out?
Yes. And,
yes, right.
Yes, I think we're moving on that path now.
Yeah, once you have that election, get used to it.
But I think Theresa May is probably not going to be prime minister anymore by then.
Well, she's been prime minister a pretty long time.
Well, comparatively.
Okay, my theory is that it's 6 months because everybody wants to dress up like Theresa May for Halloween and everybody wants to go on vacation for the entire month of August.
But you realize Halloween is not a big party over in Europe, right? Aww. You mean here?
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
Well,
everywhere.
You know, Maggie Thatcher had character.
Well, she was actually...
You may not have liked her, but
yeah,
she
I was
had
gonna say,
character.
What do you mean by character? She was vicious.
You know, there's no question.
And character
if you're dressed
you...
up as her on Halloween, you really had something. But I think this lady is much more amorphous. In other words, sort of more Mike Pence-ish than somebody who you would say, I can identify her by her character.
Well, I don't know what you mean by character. Theresa May is known to have a difficult time negotiating, speaking, and interacting with people. She doesn't have the best social skills.
Exactly.
She doesn't love to be around people when she goes to actually official events. She usually tries to nurse her glass of wine on her own. She prefers not to interact with lots of other parliamentarians. So she's a little awkward. Is that what you mean?
No.
But Theresa May, Margaret Thatcher, was simply vicious. She was on the path to demonstrate to everybody that she was tougher than any male she had ever encountered in her life. She was brutal. She was vicious towards the Northern Irish, the community, the population. If you remember the war in the Malvinas or the Falkland Islands, I mean, I'm not sure, but
I wonder how she would have gotten along with Trump. Would she have been like Merkel? In that regard, their relationship, which seems to be cold.
It's an
best.
Interesting
Vera,
idea. Yes.
You.
I have an opinion on her, I guess. Yes,
no,
I admit
no,
it.
You have character.
Well,
somebody,
have character?
Somebody, you have character. When somebody meets you, you say, wow, she's really something. She's got an identity. She's got a persona. She's got a this and that. You have character.
Does that mean you're going to dress like me for Halloween?
Isn't that how we started? Dangerous subject to get into here. Okay, let's go to Robert, who writes, and I love Robert's letter. I'm going to tell you why, because he starts it by saying, Robert from Castleton on Hudson writes. He's in other words, he's speaking of himself.
Nice.
So he says, Robert of Castleton writes.
He's not taking any chances that you're going to misread the intro.
That's right.
Right. Thank you, Ira. The question of politics and science is not how can the science behind the black hole photograph be applied to our everyday lives, but rather, why do we feel a need to instrumentalize every piece of knowledge and every creation? Isn't the value in the black hole photograph precisely its uselessness? Like other valuable, useless things such as art, music, or sitting meditation, it helps us to understand ourselves and our place in the universe. Mm-hmm. It is worth investing in the arts and useless science so we can be human once in a while and not just cogs for capitalism. And again, I want to repeat that that's from Robert from Castleton, who writes.
Wow, Robert.
Yeah.
That is quite a mouthful. Well, you know, I think uselessness is in the eye of the beholder. You know, there's something about learning something about your environment and the world and beyond that makes you a better person, that makes you understand things better. So I'm, and that's the same thing as viewing or creating a beautiful piece of art or composing a piece of music or, my favorite, dancing.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure these things are actually useless.
Yeah. And
but
you never
I
know.
Think it's an interesting point of view.
And, of course, you never know, right? I mean,
yeah.
If we had arrived on Mars and all of a sudden a little green guy came out, that would have been something maybe we didn't expect. But it didn't happen, and so now on to the next place.
Well, you know, when you sort of figure out you could send a message in the air and get from one place to another, that might have seemed useless at the time, but that gave you the telephone, that gave you the internet.
Right. But what
you know,
about
it gives you communication in some sense, you know, into space.
And how long is it going to be? You make a very good fine point. How long is it going to be? Not only can we send a message from one place to the other in seconds, but send ourselves from one place to the other in
right?
seconds.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, they've done that in Star Trek for years.
And Superman.
Yeah.
But I mean, an interesting comment on the instrumentalization of nature, really, in essence, right? Because human beings seem to have this desire to control, explain, and manage. And I mean, in that sense, you know, it's a very interesting thought and actually quite accurate.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So let's put some of those stories together and talk about what is happening in the UK, because there is good news coming out of the United Kingdom, and why not talk about it since we have Fran here? Britain proposes a broad new power to regulate internet content. What a novel idea, Fran.
It's like creating, you know, a cop for the internet so that we can minimize misbehavior and we can maximize benefit.
Is it worth it?
It is definitely worth it. I mean, right now the internet's like, certainly in the U.S.,
sure.
The internet is like the Wild West.
Sure.
And there's a lot of misbehavior that can happen that is not against policy or regulation of any sort. And Europe has been really progressive in trying to create laws and policy that protect individual Europeans' rights. And well, and what the UK is trying to do is create someone called an internet regulator, and
cop.
You can kind of
internet
think
cop.
Of that as a cop.
Yeah.
And what's their power? They can find people who are misbehaving. They can block access to websites that are inappropriate. They can make individual executives liable for what their companies are doing.
And the
so
downside,
if you
Fran?
Think about, you know, how that changes things, that's amazing.
And the downside is?
Well, the downside is the devil is in the details. How you do it, who you do it to, when you do it, you know, all of those things can make that really beneficial or make that go well.
So when you give, Fran, when you give the government the power to do this, sooner or later they will use it not only for good but for evil. They will use it to, I'm sorry.
Can I just say that governments already use it for evil? Because let's remember, we have a social media-initiated genocide in Burma, right? The Rohingya were
sure.
targeted by that regime, and it was the violence carried out by the military was encouraged on Facebook, for example. Lots of people posted absolutely hateful, incorrect information that then stirred up the population against the Rohingya Muslim community. So we already know that governments use it for that purpose. In other words, why not try to regulate it to an extent to not allow people such as we know the white supremacist guy in New Zealand who carried out the assassinations of people in the mosques, was inspired and read all this information that was posted in Norway by this Breivik guy. Remember him? He
sure.
carried
yeah.
out the mass yeah. murder. Okay, all these people have websites that they check in on, they're inspired by, and it's time for governments to also look at those kinds of issues.
Much more skeptical. Joe characterized this as, I think, as good news out of England. I'm not prepared to say that yet. Mm-hmm. Clearly, the kinds of abuses that you're citing are unacceptable. But I'm not. And I think the key line was the one that Fran just said: the devil is in the details. Because I'm a strict First Amendment guy, and there is no First Amendment in Britain. I'm loath to accept anything that might stifle discussion. And there, do I acknowledge that something has to be done in certain instances without a question? But it all depends on how it's done and who is doing it. And so let's put
think about it this way. I mean, do you believe in cops? And, you know, cops notwithstanding, cops can, you know, help support the public good.
Yeah, so
by
a
kind
cop
of
could walk down the street
orderly.
Here on Central Avenue and bust into WAMC one day.
They can.
And say to Alan, we don't like what you're saying.
And cops can be corrupt and, you know, all kinds of bad things can happen. But, you know, in a world without cops, it makes it much harder for us to be sort of civilized and support the public good. So, again, the devil is in the details.
So,
and think about that. Go on.
I'm sorry. So let's just take it away from the internet and put it on Ira's newspaper. So now you got a cop, and we've always rejected this, by the way. It's been tried several times, so-called councils and other things. So now you got a cop who says, no, that doesn't belong in your newspaper. How long would it take Donald Trump to start telling people
they
couldn't put it in
his
newspaper?
Well, he already has that. We have laws in this country that say that Ira cannot publish hate speech, right? There's a law.
Right? We can't libel somebody. I could publish hate speech. What is the Nazi newspaper doing?
We have laws against hate speech in this country.
Well, then how does the Daily Stormer print this stuff?
So there you are.
Do they actually print it,
sure.
Or do they do it on the internet mostly?
I don't
do
know
it on
what
the internet.
Well, I don't know what. Well, you're talking two different things. But Alan raised the issue of print, and they do have a print product, or at least
just
to
make
to
it clear.
They used to. Yeah. I don't think.
No,
they do
okay,
anymore.
But just to make it clear, you take it away from the internet. You put it, and that's unacceptable. It's unacceptable when it's printed, but it's not unacceptable for you guys.
So it's not acceptable, for example, if a paper like that on the internet posts the addresses or names of people that they want to target because they release anti-Semitic language. And, you know, hate speech can initiate, encourage, or condone violence against particular kinds of people, subgroups such as, you know, it might be a racist attack, an anti-Semite attack, and so on. So that is not permitted. We have limitations to speech.
All I'm saying is let's be careful.
And also anti-Semitism is in the mind of the beholder. I mean, there are people who are saying that when one particular congresswoman right now says certain things, it's anti-Semitism, and a lot of people are saying, no, it's not.
Well, it's different from calling for violence. And I think hate speech is calling on people to take action, intimidate, challenge, use violence, intimidation. I think we're taking this to an entirely different level. What I'm talking about is surrounding people, attacking them, such as in, such as the Rohingya and violence against women. I mean, there are particular white supremacists that call for such violence.
We have to go. My thanks. Bye.